Welcome once again, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast, along with Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. Thanks for the download. A little late here on a Friday. It's February 15th when we record this, but we always appreciate the download and the subscription at baseballamerica.com or via iTunes. Aaron, we're going to declare this a Roger Clemens free zone, because we assume that's baseball news you can get everywhere else.
Yes.
When you can get the baseball news on C-SPAN, you don't need to get it necessarily.
But if you want my quick take, John, Roger Clemens is a liar, and I'm just going to go ahead and say it. So
sure,
I think it's pretty disgustingly obvious.
Yeah, Roger Clemens is not going to find a lot of friends in the Baseball America. Not a lot of sympathy, I would say. I don't think you're going to find a lot of Brian McNamee sympathy here either. But I think we share the sentiment of most baseball fans, which is, yeah, this is important. It's important. I do think it's important for baseball to have, to digress a little bit. I do think truth and reconciliation is helpful in society. You've seen it in South Africa. We've actually seen it here in North Carolina for a couple of incidents, one that happened over in Greensboro 27 years ago. And there's one that just happened last year that kind of went through what happened in Wilmington, North Carolina in the 19th century. I think getting to the bottom of those kind of things, and it can be cathartic and helpful. I think it is helpful, although a flawed process, for baseball to go through all this, investigating itself over performance-enhancing drugs and all these kind of things. But it's no fun, and it's not what anybody follows the sport for. It's not why anybody how anybody looks forward to. I think we all look forward to spring training and the games on the field, and we are finally close to that. But it definitely is not but I do think it's going to, in the long run, it will be helpful to the sport.
John, you won't find a more vocal Roger Clemens detractor than myself. And frankly, I loved seeing his downfall because I think it was a long time coming. But you know what? Watching him try to defend and weave his way through all these lies in front of Congress, it was just painful. It wasn't fun to
watch. It was painful. It was good theater, and it looks like everybody watched. I was shocked, frankly. I've got a brother who lives in Washington, D.C., inside the Beltway, has for 10 years, and is completely affected by it. He thinks he's not, and it's hilarious. But he couldn't believe I wasn't interested going into that day, and I couldn't believe how interested he was. But he said in D.C., that was the day after the Potomac primaries, the day after Washington, the District of Columbia, Maryland, the District of Columbia, and Virginia all voted in presidential primaries. And you'd think if anywhere was interested in presidential politics and primaries, it would have been Washington, D.C., but he said no. That was already over. Everybody was talking about Roger Clemens. So the country was talking about it. Obviously, we didn't want to ignore it, but we also want to move on and talk about baseball and talk about practice. They're still practicing in college baseball. And our issue, our most recent issue, our college preview and early draft preview, two great tastes that go great together. Aaron and I have already podcasted at length, as you may recall, last month about our college preseason top 25. This college preview issue almost killed us, Aaron, but we're both still standing and looking forward to the season, which begins tonight, 11:30 Eastern time. I don't believe it's on television.
I don't believe it is.
But it's Hawaii and Hawaii Hilo throwing down in the 50th state. Is Hawaii the 50th state or the 49th state?
No, I wish I had an answer for you there.
In-state 49/50 in Hawaii. There's no early no February baseball going on in Alaska. I can guarantee you that. But Hawaii and Hawaii Hilo do get to start a week early. Before the rest of the country, which is really, really big, I think, of the NCAA, to let Hawaii and Hilo play each other a week before the common start date. But anyway, so we're looking forward to the start of the game of the season on the field, and we're also looking forward to the start of the season, the start of the draft season, really. And this, Aaron, the early draft preview merged with our college preview issue. I think it's exciting that this. I think we're looking forward to the 2008 draft even more than most in recent memory, because it's not just tilted to one side or the other, or like in 2006, you had really good college pitching, but the rest of the draft class was kind of panned. 2005, we had like a historically great draft with tons of hitters, which we'll go over a little bit next week when we do our podcast on the top 100, Baseball America's top 100 prospects in the minor leagues, coming next week at baseballamerica.com. But this draft class, Aaron, looks like it's got some balance on both sides, both the high school and the college sides.
Yeah, you know, John, I really agree with you. I think, first of all, looking at the college classes, that's what I'm a little bit more familiar with than the high school class.
Sure.
I think there are some big-time impact power bats in this class, which I think have been lacking recently in the college ranks. I mean, last year you had a couple of guys like Matt LaPorta and Bo Nichols. But, I mean, I love the Alvarez, the Justin Smokes. I mean, these kind of Yonder Alonso, these kind of power bats, I think are, I'm not going to say can't miss, because nobody's can't miss.
Right. But,
they're pretty promising.
Highly anticipated, and much more anticipated, I mean, than most, most classes of college hitters. Because usually the better hitters really get picked over coming out of high school.
Yeah.
Especially the ones who have some real athleticism and middle-of-the-diamond possibilities. Those players seem like they get drafted out of high school a lot more often than they do out of college. And you still, that said, you still do, in the when you look at the big leagues, you still do have a lot of college middle infielders who are big league starters and,
sure.
and potential impact players. I mean, Nomar Garciaparra is not one of those anymore. He's not a middle infielder anymore. But
Chase Utley
is one who comes to mind. Dustin Pedroia, David Eckstein, Mark Ellis, some pretty solid. Bobby Crosby when he was healthy. Troy Tulowitzki, last year's rookie sensation. Ryan Braun. So you've had some, you've had some who were drafted as middle infielders or some real impact bass guys that made it to the big leagues pretty quickly. One nugget that Jim Callis dug up is that there hasn't been a college first baseman drafted in the first 10 picks, I guess, since Carlos Pena in 1998.
So are we considering Matt LaPorta then to be an outfielder?
He was drafted as a left fielder. And that was odd. That's a different one. I think we might be stretching that one a little bit. But Carlos Pena was a first baseman in college and a big league first baseman. Because Pat Burrell was kind of a college first baseman. He was also kind of a college third baseman and moved almost immediately to left field as a pro, as was the case with Matt LaPorta. But guys like Yonder Alonso, Justin Smoke, and those two guys, perhaps Pedro Alvarez, also
maybe
eventually
Alan
a first baseman.
That's another one.
If he has a big year, you could see him going early.
Probably not the top 10 picks, but I definitely think Alan Dykstra could be a first-round draft pick.
It's, absolutely.
The corner bats in this class, really, I mean, that's what jumps out at you. These power corner bats, I mean, I can't ever recall seeing a group of first basemen as talented as those guys we just mentioned.
And in our top 25, corner bats, Pedro Alvarez 1 on our college top 100, Justin Smoke 4, Yonder Alonso 5. Then you move down the list a little ways, but you still get James Darnell, Connor Gillespie, Alan Dykstra, Brett Wallace. All those guys can hit.
Absolutely.
I think the only guy on there who's a real question mark is Brett Wallace, who certainly has performed. I think we're all kind of anxious to see how Brett Wallace performs, having shed about 35 pounds this offseason and also going to switching from first base to third base. I know you're a Brett Wallace believer.
I am absolutely a Brett Wallace believer. I think, first of all, that he's one of the best pure hitters in his class. I do think he's strong enough to, that his power will play in the professional ranks. And I think he's not a bad athlete. I mean, the rap on him, I think since high school has been he's not a good-bodied guy.
Right.
But he's really, I mean, first of all, he has slimmed down, and he's even when he was a bigger guy last year, I mean, you stand next to him, he doesn't look fat. I mean, that's actually a point that I've seen elsewhere that I agree with. He's not fat.
Right. He's just a big guy.
He's a big guy, and he's
but he's fairly athletic for his size.
He can run. He's a smart base runner. I mean, he's not a burner by any means, but. And I remember seeing Brett Wallace steal home in Houston last year at the Minute Maid Classic.
Right.
So.
I think the biggest point you're making is that he's a baseball player. He's got savvy, and he's not a slug.
Right.
I mean, like, maybe this is a little bit of a stretch, but, like, Kevin Youkilis was a guy in college who was really tagged as a bad body guy, not athletic enough.
I think that's a pretty good comp, actually.
But I think Brett Wallace is actually a much more pure hitter than Youkilis. Youkilis really thrives on his approach, his just smarts. He's got a good, you know, obviously, he can hit. He's more athletic than people give him credit for. And, I mean, I think that shows how good of a defensive first baseman he is.
Right.
I think Youkilis could play third base in the big leagues. I think he's a better first baseman defensively than he is a third baseman. I think it's the same thing for Brett Wallace. I'm really eager to see how he plays third base. So that's my Brett Wallace comp. That said, Kevin Youkilis was an eighth-round pick. I think the success of a player like Kevin Youkilis makes teams and scouts, and this is a story I think we're going to pursue down the line. Now, the profile is changing. And that teams, because of statistical analysis, but also because the hit tool is so much more paramount now than it was even 10 years ago, I think teams are more willing to take a guy like a Brett Wallace, where if you prove that you can hit, they'll overlook the fact that you're maybe a 40 runner
sure.
or a 45 defender. Bill Mills is a great example of that. If he's a 45 defender at third base, he's going to be a big league third baseman because you'll take fringy defense if you're going to produce offensively like Bo Mills, and that's what we're seeing. It's a Baseball America podcast. He's Aaron Fitt. I'm John Manuel. Aaron, we could go on a little bit about the hitters if you want to. One question I guess I have in this college class is the infield talent. There is some talent there. I think we both like guys like Brandon Crawford and Ryan Flaherty, Jamile Weeks. But it's right. There's less certainty, however, about that group, the middle infielders in college, than there is about the corner infielders we just got done talking about.
And there's more certainty even with the middle infielders than in the outfield. I think this is
a weak
outfield crop.
Great point.
I mean, there's some guys who have potential. I mean, Jordan Danks has obviously been on the prospect radar for a long time, since high school.
Yep, Kyle Russell.
But has yet to tap into that potential, I think. And Kyle Russell, again, I think a lot of people think this is a guy who you know, he's got some raw power in there, but there's still a lot of questions about that swing. Dennis Raven has big-time power, but is he even going to stick in the outfield? I think Jim Callis believes he might end up at first base. So the outfield class, I think, is thin.
Ike Davis, another example.
Sure.
Like, big-time talent hasn't quite broken through yet. And also, this year will play first base for Arizona State because they're trying to save his arm and pitch him a little bit more,
right,
among other reasons.
But I actually think the middle infield class is intriguing, if not,
right.
there aren't a lot of sure things here, but I, for one, am a big-time Brandon Crawford believer as well, probably more than some other people. He didn't have a very good summer in the Cape Cod League, but he came back motivated, I think, to prove to people that the summer was the fluke and that, Brandon Crawford has put up good numbers for 2 years. He is a premium defender. I think he's a legitimate 5-tool player, maybe not 5 above average tools,
right,
but he's got all 5.
Right. He doesn't really have a glaring weakness. The hit tool and making consistent contact is what he's going to have to do.
That's the big thing. You're right, John. He needs to make more consistent contact. But I think Gordon Beckham is another guy who's got a couple of above average tools. I mean, a guy who could be a first round pick. Jamile Weeks is really the X factor in this group, I think.
Yep.
Because he can be just an electric player, capable of stealing tons of bases and playing good defense, and he can even hit some home runs, even though he's not a very big guy.
Yeah, had some injury issues last year. Like he says, just got to stay healthy. But that's really the biggest question that you've really got with Jamile Weeks. Is it, which Jamile Weeks are we going to see as a freshman? This is a dynamic player, and dynamic college bats are hard to find, frankly. And those guys are valued in the draft. So I'm very eager to see how he performs this year. The last college, I guess, position we've discussed, the hitters, the pitchers are pretty interesting to me, Aaron, because there are a lot of big arms in this year's draft, but those big arms are not necessarily guys who've performed. So that's why in our All-America team voting and our top 100 draft list for the college side, Brian Madison and Aaron Crow are at the top.
Yeah.
They both got big-time arms, and they performed. Aaron Crow, the Friday guy from Missouri last year. Brian Mattis, fourth-round pick at a high school, has had 2 very solid years for the University of San Diego, led the nation in strikeouts last year, I believe.
Yes.
And Christian Friedrichs performed, but he's not a big arm. He's kind of your crafty. He's really the Jeremy Sowers of this draft class, I think,
right, it's
fair to say. But the rest of the guys up here are guys with big arms who haven't quite put it all together. Your Shooter Hunts, your Brett Hunters, your Ryan Perrys, your Luke Burnetts, Tanner Sheppers.
Yep.
A lot of guys like that. Or you have your guys who've performed but don't necessarily have A stuff like Jacob Thompson or Tyson Ross. I guess you probably could throw Christian Friedrich actually into that group. There's really this disparity. Again, Scott Green, big projectable body, big stuff, hasn't quite performed. Preston Gilmet has performed like crazy, doesn't have the stuff of a Ryan Perry. It's really an intriguing pitching class. I think it could go either way. This could be a really good class of college pitchers, or this could turn out to be a kind of a middling group of college pitchers that basically produces a lot of number 5 starters and middle relievers / closers.
I like this group of college pitchers, and I think it does start with Crow and Mattis, like you said. And Mattis actually, I guess, finished second last year in strikeouts behind David Price.
Okay, there you go.
But, both those guys, I think, are, to me, very safe bets. Mattis, to me, is the safest bet of all.
I agree.
I like the frame. He's left-handed.
He's got a shot to go 1-1.
I really think he does, I mean, especially if you look at the Rays. I was going to call them the Devil
Rays.
Good
catch.
If you look at the Rays and their needs, I think that they probably have more of a need for another impact arm than they do another corner bat.
And they have great pitching depth in their minor league system, but you can never have too much of that.
No.
And the other, I guess, real possibility, I think, for them is Tim Beckham, number 1 in our high school list.
Sure.
I really don't see them taking Pedro Alvarez, but wouldn't that be something if Vanderbilt, which was just nowhere on the college baseball map 7 years ago, I mean, they were nowhere. 6 years ago, 2002, they hired Tim Corbin for the 03 season. But if you go back 6 years, they were nowhere. What if 6 years after that they produced back-to-back number one overall picks? They would be the first team.
Yeah.
And it definitely could happen. Pedro Alvarez not a consensus number one. I mean, he's a consensus number one, not a unanimous number one. He was the only player who was unanimously voted on or preseason All-America team. So that's an aside. But, yeah, Crow and Mattis are the most sure things, I think.
Right, and getting back to those pitchers, I mean, I think that, you know, you've got a lot of guys, like you said, John, who've got a lot to prove, and Ryan Perry was voted onto our first team as a guy who really hasn't done anything in college. And
right.
That is a testament to his talent that he flashed in the Cape Cod League especially. There's a lot of guys here. I think this is a fairly deep group, but you wonder, you know, how much impact talent you're going to have behind those first two guys. I mean, I think it's possible that guys like Perry or, you know, Shooter Hunt and these kind of guys could be impact pitchers down the road. But
even some of the guys in our 40 list, like I like the pitchers when you go down and you get Zach Putnam at 44. No, I like Zach Putnam.
Yeah.
I like him as a power sinker kind of guy and a guy who competes. He's got the plus compete tool. Or does he? Some scouts really questioned after we went to the Cape Cod League last summer and wouldn't play a position and barely pitched. I mean, he really inspires a lot of debate, Zach Putnam.
Yeah.
DJ Mitchell. I love DJ Mitchell. I know you're a big DJ Mitchell guy. I love athletic pitchers. I love guys with fresh arms. He's been primarily a position player through his career. This year will be the first year he's really a full-time pitcher. But he's also 6'1", 160, and he's right-handed. Cody Adams, pushing 96 at Southern Illinois. Can this guy maintain that kind of velocity through a second year as a Friday guy? Is he a guy who's going to go in the first round? He sounds like he's got a first-round arm. Ryan Hinson, Eric Sirkamp, there's some interesting lefties.
Yeah.
Josh Lindblom at Purdue, a big-time arm, who, again, hasn't come through necessarily and done it. So I think this is a very deep group of pitchers, but it's a very short list of quote-unquote sure things.
Exactly. I think you nailed it.
I think it's a really, in my mind, it's an above-average group of college talent when you take the whole thing in toto. And next week, hopefully, we'll go into the high schools a little bit. But our new high school and draft writer, Matt Blood, who's joined Baseball America this year, replacing Alan Matthews, and Matt has was in the draft room with a club last year as an intern and going to be going to a lot of the showcases the way Alan Matthews did and really already hitting the phones very hard. And we'll introduce Matt into the podcast here very soon. And we'll talk a little bit more about the high school class on next week's podcast. We do have a podcast question before we wrap things up, Aaron. James Thompson in Lexington Park, Maryland, is a Penn State sports fan. And we'll forgive that, James, and reach your question anyway. Now that he has the Big Ten Network, what should he expect to see? I know that Penn State finished strong last year. Wondering if you can carry that momentum into this year. What's your quick take on the Penn State Nittany Lions, Aaron Fitt?
I think Penn State is interesting. I think they're probably going to be competing for a spot, a regional spot out of that league. I think that Michigan is still the class of the Big Ten. I think probably Ohio State is the number two team. And then for me, it's Penn State and Minnesota competing for maybe possibly a third bid out of
right.
the 10. I kind of see that league as probably a two-bid league this year. If it gets a third, I think Penn State or Minnesota are probably the teams that will get it.
Yeah, I think Penn State's got a chance to jump up and get that third bid. Because you've got that second bid, I should say. I like Ohio State's team a little bit better. We'll see if Ohio State, if Dan DeLucia can come back. And they do have more experience pitching coming back. The player to watch, I guess you'd say, at Penn State, they have a lot of veterans coming back in their lineup. If not necessarily one guy that you point to and pick out, they do have a couple fifth-year seniors who are back. But really, Drew O'Neill is the top prospect on that team, and he's their closer. So we'll see if the Penn State Nittany Lions can get some leads. They get some leads. This is a team that you would expect would be able to hold on to leads. O'Neill's got a kind of a frisbee slider, lower arm slot, 90-92 fastball. One of the better closers out there in the country. Was an unsigned, I believe, eighth-round pick last year. Kind of had a wandering college career. Penn State's his third stop after Wake Forest and then Young Harris Junior College. But Penn State is a program on the rise.
I can say that, John.
Good ballpark. I think that, and we'll see. There are a lot of, it does seem like it was already happening here, and a lot of northern teams were starting to commit to baseball a little bit more. Louisville's a great example. Having gotten to Omaha last year, I think they stand out among the crowd. But now the everyone else kind of getting pushed down a little bit with a later start date. There's an opportunity for the Big Ten and the Big East to make more of an imprint nationally, I think, now than there was 5 years ago.
And I think Penn State is one of those teams that we will see continue to rise. The facility is, like you said, is sparkling up there in State College, and they do a good job on the recruiting trail. I mean, you see those guys all over the place, and I think that's a program that is one to watch for the next couple of years for sure.
I agree. So, James, thanks for the podcast question. You can send yours in to us next week for next week's show if you want to at podcast@baseballamerica.com, and we'll keep our New Year's resolution this year of trying very hard to read more podcast questions. We're going to wrap up the podcast now, Aaron, with the news that's already out on our website. Chris Klein, second Baseball America staff member this offseason, hired as a scout by a major league club. Chris did not want to have a farewell podcast moment like Alan Matthews had, where Alan and I got a little verklempt. But we didn't want to just want to bounce this off you. Your favorite Chris Klein moment the last 5 years, 6 years of the Chris Klein regime here at BaseballAmerica.com. What are you going to miss most, I guess, to say about Chris Klein?
I think I'll miss the home-cooked meals that Chris will bring in for us and share with the office. Really a great clubhouse presence Chris Klein has been, and not afraid to make a big extra batch of soup or chili or whatever, bring it in and share it with all of us here in the newsroom. So
generosity is definitely a Chris Klein hallmark. My music collection will suffer without Chris. I have a random Manny Mix 07 Chris Klein discs all around my office and in my car, and many of them have Star Wars music on them, also randomly put on there. But Chris's cooking, I'll tell a good anecdote about Chris's cooking. He made me some Cornish game hens one time from nowhere. He had extra Cornish game hens with stuffing, and he brought them in for me, and I forgot about them because I'm that wonderful of a person. I completely forgot this gift that he gave me, and I forgot that he brought him in. About a month and a half later, there was this foul odor coming from the Baseball America refrigerator, and it was the Cornish game hens, and it was ghetto of me to forget about them, but that's what happened to him. I was let this generous gift of Chris's rot in the refrigerator, and Chris never, I don't think, held that against me. In fact, I think he made me something else later, but he's a good cook.
And he's one of the few people in the office who was up for going through the refrigerator when things like Cornish game hens got left behind. So he really took one for the team on a number of occasions there.
He did. So besides you guys missing him, I think our readers are going to miss him. But we're going to miss him in the office, and we wish Chris well, obviously, going on to some scouting and joining an organization with the Pittsburgh Pirates. We'll be back next week with another podcast. Hope you enjoyed this one. For In Fit, I'm John Manuel. Until next week, so long, everybody.